it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Don't be sad, it's over. Be happy it happened at all. Hello, welcome to Steve Bloomers Washing, the Independent Derby County Fans Podcast, recording on a Sunday morning after the Rams' 15-game unbeaten league run came to a crushing end at Adams Park. It was a pretty toxic atmosphere at the finish, and Derby ultimately came out on the wrong end of a close game against an in-form, particularly at home, Wickham Wanderers side. A second half brace from Lewis Wing did for Derby, despite an equaliser from James Collins and a late goal from Lewis Dobbin, keeping us in the fight right until the end. Joining me for the next 30 minutes or so is a couple of SBW returns. Blake Fallows, second consecutive appearance on a run of form, staking a claim. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I'm a little bit tired after yesterday's emotional roller coaster. It's been a long time since I've been that fired up at a full-time whistle, I think. So it's taken out of me a little bit.
Yeah, not surprised. I was the same. And the Derby Telegraph's Lee Curtis, pleasure to have you back on.
Thank you for having me on. Unlike Blake, yeah, very tired, long day yesterday. But yeah, it was a great atmosphere in the away end. A thoroughly enjoyable atmosphere as well, it has to be said. I think the fans were absolutely superb yesterday.
Yeah, it was pretty, from start to finish, I thought Derby fans were in great voice. And yeah, it wasn't such a long day for me because I lived about an hour drive away from the ground. So I was back home watching the rugby about 6:30, I think. But for Blake and I, it was our first time at Adams Park. But Lee, I'm presuming that you have visited Adams Park previously with Notts County. Is it always that tough a place to go?
Yeah, I have to be honest. Yeah, I know, my hands up. I know we just spoke about this just briefly before we came on. Yeah, it's never been a happy hunting ground for me, to be honest, where no matter which club I've covered. I remember Notts County getting beat there and Luke O'Neill, I think he's now at Sunderland, he got Liam Noble sent off. Yeah, it's just one of those grounds. It's really hot. There wasn't really a lot of atmosphere coming from the home end. It's just it's just a really difficult place to go for some reason. And they thrive off it because their own record has been really good this season. But yeah, Wickham and Port Vale have both been grounds that have really given me, yeah, plenty of problems throughout my career. In fact, prior to Derby's win at Port Vale this season, I don't think I ever covered a win at Vale, so that broke new ground. So as I was hoping that Derby could continue that trend yesterday, but alas, it wasn't to be.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that hopefully Derby can fix that for you at Adams Park soon, but hopefully we're not playing at Adams Park next season or anytime soon, if I'm being quite honest. Blake, I found it quite disarming, actually, Buckinghamshire? I should know if it's Buckinghamshire because I'm literally from around that area. But, you know, it's rolling hills. There's a few ramblers on those hills during the game. It's a pretty friendly place to walk around. Yeah, we had a burger outside before the game. And while the atmosphere itself is a bit tepid, as Lee kind of referenced there, their team certainly make it a tough place on the pitch. What was your first impressions of Adams Park?
Yeah, well, first of all, you had a burger outside the ground, Kutch. yeah, it's tough in League One, isn't it, when you go to these kind of places? I mean, it's lovely and what a setting. It reminds me of Forest Green a little bit, where it's kind of, you arrive and then there's just a ground from nowhere with nothing else around it. A full car park, may I add. We spotted that straight away, didn't we, Kutch? The famous car park. But yeah, it's... it went from being a really nice, friendly, they're very accommodating, weren't they, to the travelling Rams fans with a nice big marquee and all the facilities we had for the 1,800 Derby fans who travelled. But as soon as we got in there, I think, yeah, it was pretty strange. I don't think the fans were that hostile really with us because they're kind of a bit quiet. But the way they were set up, and I've seen a few tweets from Rams fans who travelled that said it was kind of anti-football. I think that's maybe slightly harsh on them. I think there was some good football played for them. McCleary and Vokes really impressed me. But I think they kind of set up to stop what Derby have been doing and get in the faces. And I've seen the comments from the manager after the game that they just wanted to make it difficult for us and make it a battle rather than a tactical battle. It was a physical battle. And I think Aaron Cashin is going to be waking up this morning with a few bumps and bruises. And it was a real kind of League One kind of battle, what you expect from a very, very solid League One side, I think.
Yeah, I was concerned, you know, in the opening, I think it was the opening minute or 2 minutes when Wickham got the ball forward really quickly. They hung up a ball to the back post for Sam Vokes. And Vokes, rather than making a genuine attempt at a header on goal, which I thought would have been a good chance just outside the six-yard box, he decides instead to completely flatten Hayden Roberts right at that back post and had him eating grass immediately. And I'm not even sure the ref gave a free kick or it was just a goal kick because Vokes did get ahead on it. And they definitely did seem to target Derby's left side for much of that half. And I thought both Roberts and Dobbin, I thought Dobbin was fantastic, particularly second half, but I thought Roberts and Dobbin both struggled to hold their own physically in that first half. A lot of play was coming down that right-hand side. And it's interesting what you say there, Blake, about the approach that Ainsworth took, because I don't know, Lee, what the two managers said in their written press conferences afterwards, but I watched Ainsworth interview with Wickham's club channel. And while Warne definitely did say that he didn't think it was a tactical game and it was more of a battle, Ainsworth kind of suggested they did something a bit different. They were overloading certain areas and trying to create traps. And he was basically suggesting that if you went into play against Derby with a normal formation, Derby have basically undone every single team for the last 2 months and they did something a bit different in it, and it paid off. What was your view of kind of the tactical battle, whether it happened or not, you know, from the press box?
I thought it was interesting because you kind of know what you're going to get from Wickham. I think what they did really well yesterday is, when you think of the quality that Derby are blessed with, the influential players who have been so good and amazing on this unbeaten run since October didn't really have too much impact on the pitch. You know, I think to Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, who's been in incredible form, very rarely got in 1v1 moments and generally had one of his more quieter afternoons. They did a very good job on Conor Hourihane. They followed him everywhere he went, gave him no room whatsoever, because obviously they made that mistake in the first game where they just lost track of him and obviously scored the two goals against Wickham, didn't he, in the win at Pride Park. So I just felt that it was like one of those games where it was a scrap. And in those games this season where it has been a bit of a scrap, Derby just haven't really been able to sort of work it out and try and impose themselves on the game. I think what happens is Derby are a brilliant team. If you give them momentum, they are so hard to stop and they're brilliant to watch. They will just steamroll you. You know, if you think, look back to Morecambe in the second half, Forest Green Rovers, etc. I mean, even against Bolton, I thought they were really, really good for large spells. But in those games where it becomes a real tightly contested scrap in the middle of the pitch and it's second balls and flick-ons. I don't think Wickham are the most aesthetically pleasing team you'll see in the league this season. But what I will say is they are incredibly effective at what they do. They've got some really talented players. They're high energy, they're high octane, they don't give you a moment's peace. And I just think you have to take you out of term. I think they did a really good job on Derby's key players. You know, even McGoldrick, for instance, you know, when you see him drop into midfield and he gets his head up and he starts spreading the play, he didn't see much of that yesterday until the space started to open up in the second half. So I think you just have to put it off as one of those afternoons, really. And hopefully you don't face them in the playoffs if they make it into the top six.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that question later on about, I think I'd probably want to avoid Wickham, particularly over two legs in the playoffs. It's interesting what you say there about the battle, Lee, because obviously I think Paul Warne would say that his side should be characterised by that in a similar way to what you know, Wickham are characterised. Blake, do you still think that maybe, look, we've been on a fantastic run and it's hard to criticise the team for anything. There's not much to really criticise them for yesterday to be honest. But do you think maybe that there's still, do you think Warren would still prefer to have a few more real high energy fighters in that team? Do you think maybe a game like Wickham away is one where it shows maybe he's still lacking a couple of players of his profile?
Yeah, definitely. I think that was the one thing I kind of took away from yesterday. And I think first half, my assessment would have been that the midfield was kind of losing that battle. The two centre-halves were getting the ball and playing the way that we've played all season, which has been so effective. But they were stepping into that space and there wasn't always a midfielder on. So it's winning those little battles. And I know it's kind of a cliche, but when you're winning the second balls, and that's normally a bit of a yardstick for how well you're doing. And I think Wickham were probably won 75% of those second balls in the midfield. And I don't know if it's a question of, it's not a question of desire, because this team are brilliant, and they've shown time and time again that they've got that desire and they've got that togetherness, and how they performed in the second half to keep going. And we were still in the game in the 95th minute. So it's not a question of desire. It's just, have we got those players that can really roll the sleeves up when it's a scrap and go and win those second balls and make it as difficult for Wickham as they made it for us? So yeah, I do think we may be missing one or two kind of Warren type players.
I mean, I don't think we'd say Max Bird is a typical Warren type player, but I did think on the midfield point, Blake, that we were missing a body in there yesterday. And I wonder if Max Bird had been fit and available, would he have played McGoldrick and Collins and had, you know, I think he probably would have had Bird with Harahan and Knight in the number 10, in that kind of aggressive number 10 position, which has worked so well in recent weeks. But it's bloody hard to drop one of those two, particularly the form that McGoldrick's in. And the fact that Collins probably is exactly the type of player you would want against Wickham Wanderers, kind of leading the line against their players. So do you think, Lee, that we maybe suffered from not having a three out-and-out midfielders rather than having two forwards? Would that have made a difference, particularly in that first half, where we did struggle, I thought, to take control?
I think Max just gives you that extra insurance policy, doesn't he? You know, in front of the back four, he sort of sits at the base of it all. Yeah, I think an extra man in midfield may have helped. But again, I think it was those individual battles. It's trying to sort of impose yourself in terms of what you can do on the ball as well. And I just don't think that we did that. And that was a credit to Wickham, really. The space only really sort of started to begin to open up in the second half, didn't it? Sort of the last 20 minutes when it started to become a little bit end-to-end. But I think Max has been terrific. I generally don't think he's got the credit he deserves for the stuff that perhaps people don't see. You know, the little block offs are sort of, you know, he's quite smart at reading danger. And yeah, we probably did miss him yesterday. I think obviously you listen to Paul speak about Max and he absolutely loves him. So and I think had he been fit yesterday, I do think he would have been playing because that formation that he has used and what has been so good over the recent weeks was that 4-3-3, wasn't it? You know, Jason Knight in sort of that advanced position, allowing him to go and chase and Harry. And it sort of worked. But then, of course, that brings the ultimate problem of who do you pick out of James Collins and David McGoldrick. But like you rightly point out, James Collins against Wickham, a game where you expect you're going to need to battle and scrap, he would have been the perfect choice. And, he did, you know, at least he did score yesterday. But yeah, I think, had Birdie been fit, yeah, I think he would have definitely played, yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's impossible. It's easy with hindsight, Blake, but how do you tell David McGoldrick he's starting from the bench after he just bagged a hat-trick? Because, you know, with hindsight, you look at that game and go, you know what, McGoldrick would have been much more effective coming off the bench in the second half, you know, having already won the midfield battle, having given ourselves a platform. But you can't really, can you? Like, does Warren need to be maybe a bit cuter and explain to players, you know, which I imagine he probably already does, you know, this is your role in this game and we do need you again for Tuesday and for Saturday and for Tuesday and for Saturday. You know, we've got to sometimes wrap these players up in cotton wool. So do you think we might need to keep picking our games more with when you play both of them together or you play an extra midfielder, because he's just got a hat trick. So how do you leave him out?
No, I do agree. I agree. And it's how you approach it. And Warren, I think he's demonstrated that he's a master of communication. So I think he's somebody who could put it the right way and without leaving him out and McGoldrick dropping his head. You've got to wrap McGoldrick up in cotton wool, haven't you? I mean, he's 35 years old. He's incredible on his day. And I've seen more than one person, the managers, I think Danny Carley said it on the highlight show last week. It's not fair that he plays in League One because he is that good. And going into the running that we've got, obviously four out of the five games coming up are at home, where McGoldrick is probably going to be more effective when he's got that space and the more time on the ball to do what he does. It's easy to sit here and say maybe we should have left him out and then brought him on, but then we maybe could have been 2-0 down and then people would have been saying, why didn't we start McGoldrick? He's the best player. So
yeah,
with hindsight, maybe, yeah. I just think you've got to be really careful with McGoldrick, because in them physical games, if he picks up a knock that would have left him out for the next 3 or 4 weeks, we are then kind of struggling for depth in that position, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think it's an easy decision if Max Bird is available, because, you know, if Harvey White had been in the building for maybe a couple more months, maybe, and had a few more starts under his belt and got up to speed, and maybe you can play White in there with Hatrahan and then Knight further forward or White further forward. But I think if you've got Max Bird available, it's quite an easy decision to go, all right, we'll go back to type and we'll start either Collins or McGoldrick up front with Knight behind him. I think his hands are a little bit tied from the maybe lack of options he trusts 100% right now in central midfield, because Bird playing there, as Lee mentions, just frees up Hourhand and Knight. You know, Knight just feels a bit constricted when he's having to play in a two alongside a Hourhand, because you kind of want both of them going forward and delivering what they can offer going at the top end of the pitch. I won't dwell on the first goal, Blake, because obviously the first goal that that Vokes scored was unlucky. I did think that we did always look quite open right from the beginning on the counter attack, and they really did get players forward. I think Hamlin, McCleary, you know, supporting Vokes really well, wing as well from the centre. But it was a real sucker, wasn't it? Because they broke on us from a corner. I think it was a corner or attack that broke down, and they just got men forward, and we never looked in control of that situation. And I know that they got a fortunate deflection that fell into Vokes' path, you know, 8 yards out. But it always felt like we were a little bit scrambly on when we were getting counted on.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. It's something I noticed yesterday, and I think it's something that's always going to happen where Warren's first away game. And I think within the first few minutes, we had a corner and we had 10 people in the box, which was something we've not seen at Derby County for a long, long time. And I think if you're throwing men forward, and I know it's Warren's philosophy that he doesn't mind losing if he's gone to win kind of thing, but if you are going to go for it and pile men up when we get set pieces, occasionally you are going to get picked off, aren't you? And I think it's an occupational hazard. It's something Warren, I think, is not happy with, obviously, but I think it's a risk he's willing to take, that it's the way he plays. And it's if we get picked off occasionally, it's kind of so be it, because it's his method. But yeah, I think we were very lucky at times yesterday, because there was times where we looked like we were in control of the defending the counter-attack and we're kind of getting overrun, especially with the quality of McCleary, who I think is one of the best players I've seen this season on the ball. He looks so comfortable, and every time he got the ball, it looked like something was going to happen or he was going to make something happen. And I was worried every time he got it. So yeah, it was, I don't know if it's something that Ainsworth had picked on and one of the tactical things that he picked up on in his post-match interviews tactically, that it was an area they're going to target, that Derby kind of leave men forward and we could kind of pick them off. But it was disappointing that we didn't have as much control as we maybe could have in those situations.
Lee, when Collins did equalise, which I thought kind of came out, it was a brilliant bit of play from McGoldrick picking the ball up on the right-hand side and beating his man and whipping the ball in. And for once, we did put quite a few balls in across the face of the goal, you know, in both halves, and never really had anyone on the end of it. But Collins was there to finish. Did you feel then, Lee, that surely Derby will go on and win this now, considering obviously the events of the last few weeks where we've been in similar situations?
Yeah, I got to be honest, I was expecting another Port Vale, to be fair. But yeah, it didn't quite materialise. The goal came at a decent time. I just felt at that point, obviously, I think Paul was going to make a string of changes at that point, wasn't he? He had them all ready.
Yeah.
And then obviously, I think the goal made him think, well, actually, you know, we've got back into the game now. Is the game, so it's one of those difficult decisions as a manager. What do you do? You know, do you change it in the aftermath of a goal because you're not quite happy with what you've seen for the first 60 minutes or whatever it was? A difficult one for a manager, but I just felt at that stage at 1-1, I thought, was that the sign that the momentum of the game was finally shifting? But unfortunately, I just think like the corner goal for Lewis Wing, I think that was a disappointing goal to concede. We just got a little bit caught out there. But even then, I just felt that the sort of influential players, the wide players, just didn't get as much joy as I would have liked. And I think maybe that was part of Wickham's game plan, because obviously, you know, like if you give Nathaniel Mendes-Lang space in this league and you let him 1v1 with a fullback, he's pretty much got everybody on toast in this division, hasn't he? I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
He's that good. And Dobbin has been in really good form this season. I didn't think he'd had the best of first halves, although Derby really struggled to get the ball out to him. So I kind of felt like the goal was a big lift in confidence, because it was felt like it was one of those afternoons where you were sort of toiling away, you were struggling to sort of create openings. So I thought that would be like the pivotal moment in the game, but alas, it wasn't to be. We just didn't, after scoring that goal, the game reverted back to type again. It was like fighting for that control, fighting for those moments where we could have that room to engineer enough space to have a cross or a shot. And I did think there were perhaps too many times yesterday where they took an extra touch. They didn't sort of shoot on sight. I mean, there was one for Corey Smith in the first half where I think, you know, he should have shot, but took an extra touch, tried to come inside in the box. And I have to say, the Conor Hourihane chance in the opening few minutes was a really good chance, you know, when you look back at it. I think if he'd have caught that a bit more sweetly, and as we all know, first goals in games are so important. If that had gone in early on, maybe we could have seen a completely different game, because I think Wickham would have had to come out a bit more. But yeah, it was just, you just have to chalk it off as one of those games. And listen, Derby have been magnificent since October. There was never going to be a way that they were going to stay unbeaten until the end of the season. You know, you just have to suck it up. I think what you know is most important is how they respond, and they've got back-to-back home games now. So you'd expect, given their form at Pride Park, you'd expect at least 4 points out of six, if not 6 points out of six.
Yeah, we'll come on to those next four games in a second, because it's a very busy second half of February. I mean, you touched on Nathaniel Mendes-Lang there, Lee. He was kind of starved, really, of service pretty much all game. I mean, there was one incredible moment in the first half, which was kind of Gareth Bale-esque, where he got someone shot a ball out to him. It was kind of chest height, right on the wing. He manages to use the, you know, flick his boot up, kind of back heel it over the fullback, run round the other side, pick it up, and then put a ball across the front of the goal. And I was sat there watching. I was like, is this League One? Like, how is it? He hasn't been in the game at all, because he's not been given the ball. And then he does something which I've never seen in this division, or probably even the Championship, to be honest. And it really did deserve a goal. The other good chance that Derby squandered in the first half, and I'm not sure if it was before the opener or after, was the James Collins header, where he seems to head it back across goal, looking for someone to get on the end of it, where he probably could have just tried to head it back towards the far post, you know, looping back, and he kind of threw his hands up afterwards, asking where the midfield runners were or where McGoldrick was to get on the end of it. But I thought that was a chance. He probably should have gone for goal himself. But yeah, the first goal of Lewis Wing from the short corner, Warren was obviously very disappointed with both Lewis Wing's goals. Yeah, it was a pretty simple short corner routine, which Wing then passed into the corner from the edge of the box under no real pressure from the Derby players getting out. And the second was a really, you know, poor attempt at stopping across from Louis Sibley, allowing Wing to kind of finish from close range. That's only one clean sheet now in the past six games. Obviously, Derby have been concentrating on scoring goals a lot more, I think, recently than stopping them. Blake, are there any worrying signs regarding this defence creaking a bit? Or as you said, is it just a occupational hazard? Obviously, we were chasing the game in that second half, but that short corner particularly, Paul Warren's going to be disappointed with.
I don't think it's time to panic. I think both centre halves yesterday both had very good games again. Cashin throwing himself in front of everything, I think he really enjoyed. I think he came over at the end with like half a smile on his face. I think that's a game that
Yeah.
I had Erin Cashin's name written all over it, didn't it? He loves that kind of battle and winning those headers, throwing himself in front of everything. And Fozzie, again, had a really good assured game at centre-half. He's looking a revelation there, winning near enough everything that comes up to him against Sam Vokes, who's an experienced striker and did really well yesterday. So it's just little things, isn't it? And I think set pieces at both ends are something maybe Warren will be looking at when he looks back at the video with his coaching staff, either today or Monday morning or whenever he looks back. Because the two things that I was disappointed with leaving Adams Park yesterday were our set pieces, because we didn't really ever look like scoring from a set piece, and the defending of set pieces.
Just lastly then, Blake, obviously, when we go 3-1 down, quite a few Derby fans did start to leave, which I found surprising considering, you know, Derby's track record of late goals this season and the fact we do fight to the end. Lewis Dobbin does get a goal pretty much out of nowhere. Really nice move, which, and a brilliant finish from Lewis Dobbin. It all kicks off then in the goal with Erin Cashin first, and then James Collins kind of wrestling with the Wickham goalkeeper, who's holding onto the ball for way too long. I don't know how referees stop that from happening, because it's totally one-sided in the sense that the goalkeeper can just kind of passively hold on to the ball and the attacking player looks like the aggressor, and the goalkeeper can just keep holding onto it, knowing all he's going to do is get a yellow card, hoping he provokes something really stupid from the opposition player. I just think it's something that football needs to crack down on and make some kind of rule about. And I don't really know what that is, but it was pretty dangerous, because a lot of Derby fans rushed to the front of the stand, you know, kind of threatening to get onto the pitch. There was a bit of argy-bargy between some stewards. A steward definitely pushed a Derby County fan off to advertising hoarding, which didn't look pleasant. And I think there's some complaints made about that. But it felt like from that moment on, Blake, that Derby weren't able to capitalise really on that late goal from Dobbin, and Wickham probably did a bit of a masterclass and completely killing the game, running the clock down. And it was just a really frustrating last 5 or so minutes, because Derby just didn't look like they were going to force that equaliser.
Yeah, I think the Wickham goalkeeper, he almost incited a mini riot in the away end with his actions, and I think he got a couple of shoves from his actions. But what he did with that was, we've scored to get within a goal with a few minutes to go, and it just completely killed that, didn't it? Because it was, instead of getting the ball back, running to the halfway line, right, here's another wave, we go again. It killed that momentum, didn't it, a little bit. And I think that's exactly what he's trying to do. And I think if we were in that situation at home and a team pulled a goal back, I'd maybe be expecting Wildsmith to hold on to the ball and maybe kick it into the stand, or just don't let them have the ball straight back. Let's try and kill this momentum. So he did hold on to for a little bit too long. And I think when the two stewards went straight onto the pitch and escorted him off the pitch, I think they kind of, they knew what the atmosphere was like in that away end, because if one of those Derby fans would have spilled over, I think, it could have been a bit nasty. But he did completely kill that momentum. And there was a few instances in the 5 minutes of added time afterwards where they managed the game really well, didn't they? They were restricting us to throw-ins and kind of set pieces in our own half. And when those set pieces came in, defending them very assuredly. So, yeah, I think they managed that last 5 minutes very, very well, Wickham.
More in the second half, but don't forget you can support SBW and get an extra podcast each month over on our Patreon. And this month, all new and existing members will be entered into the draw to win one of two stunning History of Derby County cartoon prints. Check out our socials to see what you could win. Head over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing to join and get involved in our Rams community.
Hi, Derby County fans. I'm Branko Struper.
Hi, I'm Paolo Wanchop.
Hi, I'm Mart Poom.
And you are listening to Steve Bloomers Washing.
So, Lee, Warren is obviously frustrated by a lack of threat from corners and set pieces, and I think specifically corners, and kind of Blake referenced it in the first half there. Is it poor delivery that we're lacking, or is it with some aggression in the box? Because I think his exact comments, Lee, in some of his post-match press was that he felt we weren't threatening enough on that first ball in, we weren't winning that first contact.
it's strange, really, because they have got some really good headers of the ball. Like, you know, look at Aaron Cashin. I mean, crikey. I mean, he amazes me because he's not like this 6'4" strapping centre-half, but he never loses a header. It's just, honestly, just incredible feat, really. And he's one who's good. I think Fozzie's decent in the air. I mean, I kind of think that with Hurricane's delivery as well, that you would think that, you know, it's like a recipe for goals, isn't it? You know, you've got someone who can take really good free kicks and corners, and you've got two good centre-halves who are good at attacking the ball. I mean, James Collins isn't too shabby in the air. Maybe there's just not enough what I would call too many aerially dominant players in the team. You know, if you look at Cashin and Forsyth and Collins, outside of that, really, there's not what I would call players who you would say, well, yeah, he's a terrific header of the ball. I mean, Curtis Davis would be one, but obviously he's not in the team at the moment. So I don't think Derby are blessed with sort of those players who I would say are physically and aerially dominant. And that is obviously a major part of set pieces, particularly at League One. You know, if you look at the likes of Wickham, very, very good. I think it's something that's going to have to evolve over time. I think that's going to have to come with trying to get players in who can make those difference from set pieces, because Derby had enough of them yesterday. But yeah, I agree with Paul. They just, I don't know, for whatever reason, it's that struggle for first contact, whether it's a bravery thing, whether it's that willingness not to really put your head in there and not get hurt for the cause. But I mean, there was what game was it earlier this season when I think Hayden Robertson scored? And I don't know why they don't practice him more, because obviously they get a day off. If they score from a set piece, they get a day off. So I don't, like, this is what blows my mind, is that you'd think that they'd be like battering through everybody to get a first contact and score a goal from a set piece, because they would get the Monday off. So, all a little bit strange, because they've got everything there. You know, they've got, you know, because a lot of the time you look at teams, you think, well, they haven't really got a good set piece taker, but they've got that. So I don't understand. It is a little bit strange, because I think set piece goals, particularly at League One level, are so important. I think Derby are pretty good at defending them, but it's just, yeah, it's the attacking set pieces that, you know, sometimes they can turn a game in your favour. And yesterday, I think there were so many corners in the first half, they just weren't able to maximise their opportunity. And I just felt... And I think that has been a theme throughout the course of the season.
Lee, one point that I kind of picked up on yesterday was that there's not a reliance, but there's a lot of the short corners where Mendes Lang will go over and kind of roll it short. And instead of just putting the ball into the box for a Cashin or a Fozzie and just whipping it into the penalty spot and saying, go and attack it, there was a lot of these short corners that weren't kind of paying off.
Yeah, Do you know what? I've got to be honest. I absolutely hate short corners. Like, I detest them. I just, like, it's not, and it doesn't matter, because I just think you're wasting a free opportunity to put a ball into the box. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, I can understand maybe if you're not particularly physically dominant, but I think a ball coming in from that area of the pitch direct from a corner is a lot harder to defend than trying to be a little bit cute and work a short corner routine, because, you know, short corners, teams can be pretty switched on from them, and it just sort of takes away that sort of instant delivery, and it's a waste of a free cross, isn't it? Let's be honest. And I don't really like them.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely, with a short corner, you're definitely reducing your chances of getting the ball into the box, right? Because you're adding an extra variable to it. I can see why sometimes you can move the defence around, but it can work against you, as you said. And I think if Derby were performing well from set pieces in the way that Paul Warren wants them to, they wouldn't be taking these short corners. They wouldn't be taking these corners as short as often. It's interesting, because I think you're right. You look on paper, you know, Craig Forsyth, Aaron Cashin, James Collins. That's not that many, though. And also, even Curtis Davis, his goal record isn't anything to speak of. You know, he's never been, although he is a big guy, he's very dominant in the air at the back in the defensive areas. He's never been consistently, you know, the late Reading equaliser aside, when he turned into Cristiano Ronaldo a couple of years ago. Like, that aside, I don't really remember many towering headers, particularly from set pieces. Craig Forsyth's goals, I've never seen him score that many from corners from set pieces. He often turned up at the back post when he's played left back, kind of a towering header there. Or, you know, he scored lots of goals with his feet. And Cashin scored one or two goals. He scored at Blackpool, was his first goal in the away game. And that was from a deep free kick. So the track record, I don't remember James Collins getting on much in terms of corners either. So I think there's a couple of players there that look like they should be good from set pieces, but I don't know that statistics back it up. I'm never 100% convinced by Harahan's delivery. Again, maybe he's not got enough to target. I think the best player, there's a couple of games, I think it was around December time, right in the middle of Louis Sibley's run at left back. And there's a couple of games when Louis Sibley was put on corners and he was putting in brilliant corners. I don't know if that was just a stopgap because there's some people out of the team, but I thought he was definitely taking them over Bird and taking them over Harahan at the time. And he was putting in good delivery. Maybe it was a complete fluke for a couple of games, but I'd be interested to see if somebody gets back in the team, if he goes back on them. Because I do remember him. I think it was the game Asuda scored two goals. Sibley was on corners and was particularly impressive. Let's just talk a little bit about our competitors in that race for top two in the playoffs before we're going to talk about Bielik and then we'll wrap it up. But how do you see the top two shaping up, Lee? Because there's a lot of teams in form right now, and it certainly seems to me like the division, particularly that top 6 to 8, is only improving at the moment. You know, teams like Wickham, who we just experienced, you know, Barnsley have definitely got their act together in the last couple of months. Bolton, we're on a good run of form. We beat them and they've gone on to win 4 in the spin, which is what we're going to need to do, having just lost yesterday. How do you see that race for top two shaping up, Lee? Is it really just you can't look much beyond Wednesday and Plymouth? Where's your 50p?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think what I found remarkable is if you think back to when we lost at Ipswich and then we went on this remarkable unbeaten run, I mean, usually you'd expect that to have closed the gap to like between 3, 4, 5 points. But it's, you know, the consistency of Sheffield Wednesday. And I know because I've got a mate who's a Sheffield Wednesday fan. He said, listen, we have not been brilliant this season, but we just grind out results. And you look, he's right. You know, it's 1-0 here, 1-0 there. I mean, they had a draw yesterday, didn't they? They've not been like this free-flowing, incredibly swashbuckling team who have marched to the top of the league. They've just got the job done in every game. Even when they came to Pride Park, they didn't look like you know, you would have struggled to denote who was top, you know, who was in a better position in the league, because it was a really hard-fought game. But yeah, they just seem to just be able to, they just seem to be this machine that just be grind out results. Plymouth, I keep expecting them to have a wobble, but they never seem to do. I don't think the top two is beyond Derby. I think they're still very much in it, but that would all depend on obviously stringing together another really good run like they've just been on, I think, because I do think there will be... Listen, I don't think Sheffield Wednesday or Plymouth are going to go the remainder of the season unbeaten. I just think you have to be in that position where you have to be able to capitalise. Ipswich seemed to be a bit hit and miss. I mean, they went to Cambridge, didn't they, the other week and got a draw. Bolton are a very, very dangerous team. I thought they made some really good additions in January. If I was a betting man, I'd probably say that Derby will finish in the playoffs.
I wouldn't put it past Derby putting another big run together. Yeah. It's just whether or not Wednesday and Plymouth can drop enough points. And I'm like you, and a lot of Derby fans, I think, would be looking at Plymouth going, surely they're not going to keep up. Surely they're going to have a wobble. You know, they've lost their goalkeeper, which I think is a big blow for them. I think I think common consensus is he's the best goalkeeper in the league. And he's out for the season after doing his cruciate, which is a huge blow. And I was maybe, you know, hoping that might work to our advantage, but they got a good win yesterday. I think it was against Portsmouth at home. They won 3-1. And obviously they're back at top of the pile. So, you know, it's a great story for Plymouth. I'd love to see them get promoted to it. It's not at Derby's expense, but I think it's a great story for the league. Blake, where did Wickham rank for you among the opposition we've seen this season? I thought they were the toughest, if not the best, the toughest team that we've come up against.
Yeah, they're up there. They're certainly up there. I think Plymouth, when they came here, looked very, very impressive. But in terms of going on the road and facing teams, they were the most... I mentioned it, and it's a little bit of a cliche, isn't it? But the most kind of what you expect from a League One side. Very organised. Yeah. They had the quality in areas, but how they matched up and how they played Derby yesterday, I think it was a fair play to Gareth Ainsworth. I think it was a masterclass. And I think it'd be taken away from him to say that it was kind of just a physical battle and stuff, because I think he got it spot on yesterday. And I think they're going to be there or thereabouts, aren't they? So it could be, I hope not, but we might be going back there again.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think of all the teams we've played that we could play in the playoffs, I think I wouldn't, in terms of a two-legged game, I would not fancy, I would not want to go to Wickham. I think we might do them over two games, but that would be, I think that would be a pretty tight, tense, toxic two-legged tie.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think just touching on what Lee said about the run-in and Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday, obviously we've had an incredible run, hampered slightly by the start of the season. We can't forget that obviously some of the away games, obviously like the Fleetwoods, Morecambes, Lincolns, where we missed out on points, that's hampered us. And we've gone on an incredible 15-game league run, but so have Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth have gone on this run. I don't think the automatics are quite out of the question yet, and we've got to go to Plymouth and get something. And I tell you what, Kutch, I would love it if we beat them. Love it.
Yeah, and we've got to go Barnsley as well, and we've got Wednesday last game of the season, but unfortunately that's three different teams. What we could do is playing one of those teams three times and having opportunities to take 9 points off them. But let's just finish it off with our monthly check-in with Christian Bielik, I guess you could call it. Lee, he scored for Birmingham City this weekend. I know obviously you were talking about this quite a bit in the run-up to January and around January, if you know whether or not we could recall him or have him back. What's Paul Warne's take on Christian Bielik? As I know, obviously, you've asked Paul Warne about this a couple of times. What do you think the plan is?
Well, obviously, Christian was sent out on loan, wasn't he, to Birmingham? I think it was Liam. I think, yeah, it was Liam. He was obviously in charge, wasn't he, at the time? I think the player wanted to go and play as high as he could in the Championship. Birmingham was a good fit for him because he'd been there before. So it kind of ticked a lot of the boxes for the club financially. He's on a lot of money. He's the highest earner. So I just think it was a perfect storm, really, in many respects, in that for Derby, got him off the wage bill. I don't think Christian particularly wanted to play in League One, and that wasn't helped by comments by the Poland national coach, who said, listen, you can't play in League One if you're going to be in the World Cup squad. So that was another reason as to why he moved. Obviously, I think he's got a year. He's not out of contract until next summer, is he? So it would be when he returns in the summer, he'd have a year left. I think it all depends on what league Derby are in as to where Christian Bielik's future is, to be honest. If Derby don't get promoted this year, then I don't think we will see him again in a Derby shirt, because I think he'll have his own designs on keeping his international place, and I think he'll still want to play in the Championship. So I think in that respect, the move to Birmingham is good for him. It's good for the club financially. It made a lot of sense in that respect. I just feel that this all hinges on promotion, really. I think if Derby get into the Championship, I think there's a good chance he'll stay. But he had quite a lot of interest there. I think there was a talk about Watford in the January window that were keeping an eye on him. But obviously Birmingham had him. Derby had the chance to recall him, but it made no sense. And I think Paul went on record several times when I asked him, saying, look, he didn't want a hostage in the dressing room. And I think if you look at what John Eustace says and what Christian said, he was happy in the Championship. So it's a shame, because I really wanted to see him play in a Derby shirt. Obviously, I came and not seen him kick a ball in a Derby shirt. So I really wanted to see how he'd fit into sort of this Paul Warne team. But if we are to see Christian Bielik stay at Pride Park, then they would perhaps need to go up.
Well, we put out the question to Derby fans on Twitter before the game on Saturday as to whether we should expect to see Christian Bielik in a Derby shirt again. And it prompted plenty of debate as usual. Andrew Woodman said, fair chance if we go up. Otherwise, let's see what he fetches in the summer. Similar to what Lee was saying there. Joe Stevenson, only if we go up. Definitely cashing in this summer if we don't. Harry Rudkin, not if we stay in League One. If we go up, however, we must look to keep him around. And then a few other opinions here. Graham Coates says, nope, move on and learn from the lesson. I expect he's referencing the expensive fee and long contract there. Ian West, please no. get a decent amount of cash for him before he is out for a year and leaves for nothing. And Jimmy Cockney, Ram believer, says he needs to move on now. It's a new era for us. He was beginning to look the part, but circumstances aborted it all. I wish him well. Loved his last goal for us. A great memory. Blake, I'll give you a hypothetical then, because considering I think we're all in agreement probably that it is dependent on what division Derby are in. If Derby were to get promoted and there was maybe a nice offer on the table from someone else in the Championship, do you think he's a Warn type player? I mean, we were talking about set pieces earlier. Bielik is a genuine threat from corners and set pieces, and he showed that for Birmingham City at the weekend. Do you think he could have a role in a Paul Warren midfield in the Championship?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's definitely a place for him. He's undoubtedly got the quality, hasn't he, to do it in the Championship. And we didn't see as much of him as we would have liked with the injuries he had. I'm kind of in the camp of, there's always a nostalgic view from Derby County fans with ex-players. We had it recently with Chris Martin when he was a free agent. As much as I love Chris Martin, and he's up there, he's in the top three of my favourite Derby County players of all time, I'm in the camp now of look forward and not backwards, and I trust Paul Warren 100% with what he's doing. So if you can go out and command a good fee for Christian Bielik, even if we do get promoted, and then Paul Warren can spend that cash on what he thinks he needs to improve this side and bring his kind of players in to suit his system, I would be happy with that. So if you can go and recoup some of that 10 million, I was going to say the 10 million that we spent, but I'm not sure how much of that £10 million we've actually spent. So if we can go and get some money back into the club that can be reinvested into players that suit how Paul Warren plays, I would be happy with that.
Yeah, it'll be certainly interesting. Obviously, you know, perfect scenario is we get promoted and we're in a position of strength to make that decision, and Paul Warren can have, you know, have that decision to make, whether or not you integrate him into a midfield, which, you know, alongside Bird, Harahan and Knight, again, would be a great four different options in midfield in the Championship. But I think we're probably getting a bit ahead of ourselves. But I'm agreeing with you, Blake. You know, trust in Warren, trust in the process. I think they'll make the right decisions. Just very quickly, almost a couple of word answers, I guess, guys. We did this a few months ago when we had the Bolton away game coming up, and I think we had a home game against Forest Green. We had a run of three home games and the away game at Bolton. And we kind of asked our guests, I think it was me and Ollie from Derby County Blog at the time, for kind of what our target points would be in those four games. And we all said, you know, three home wins and an away draw, we'd take that. And that's exactly what we ended up with. Now, between now and the 28th of February, got a very busy 2 weeks, home matches versus Lincoln, Charlton and Cheltenham, and there's a key away game squeezed in there too at Barnsley. Lee, is it, do you think same again? Do you think what, three home wins and a point away would be an acceptable return?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only fixture that gives me a little bit of concern is that Charlton game, because they like just tend to be this team that can do incredible things or be incredibly bad. Like, literally, you do not know what you're going to get with them. And I thought Macaulay Bond was a good signing for them. But I would agree with that. I think Derby have been amazing at Pride Park, particularly since Paul's come in. I think he's done a brilliant job since being appointed a head coach in terms of getting Derby on the front foot at home. They've been excellent to watch, an absolute treat. I think they'll win their home games. They just look so strong at home. Particularly, and I think they seem to relish the space that they get as well, and that allows the better, the more influential players more time on the ball. But yeah, I would agree with you there, Coach. Definitely, that would be my view.
And Blake, I presume you'll be going. Is Barnsley a Tuesday night or is it a Saturday? Because I think we've sold out that massive stand again.
I think it's a Saturday.
Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all kind of blend into one. When you go in there, I just keep getting messages saying, have you got the money for the tickets? And I'm like, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a Saturday. But I don't know if I've been hypnotised by Paul Warren with listening to him, because I don't even play for him and I'm buying into it 100%. But he keeps saying there's 2 points a game. And I think Lee's spot on with the Charlton at home game. That's a tough game. So you've got four games, two wins, two draws, 8 points over four games, 2 points a game. I think Warnie would be happy with that.
Interesting. Okay, well, enjoy the next few games. I think I don't think I'm making it to those, but I think me and Tom are certainly targeting Peterborough, Oxford, Bristol Rovers and Forest Green away in the coming months. So, Blake, hopefully I'll see you on the road at one of those.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll see you with a massive hot dog outside of Grand somewhere coming up soon.
And Lee, a pleasure as always. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you for having me on. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Up the Rams. See you next time.